Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready! Buffalo Bills game day on the Buffalo Bills radio network.
All right, here we go, here we go. We gotta have a drive.
23 left, 23 left.
Time now for Bills game day with Jeremy White, powered by Energy Mart, official energy supplier of the Buffalo Bills.
All right, good morning. Welcome to week two. This is Buffalo Bills game day. We are getting you ready for a 1 o'clock kickoff between the Bills and the Miami Dolphins with John Murphy and Eric Wood calling the play-by-play from the Northwest Bank broadcast booth. Today's game is presented by Independent Health. The red shirts are all about your health. And Bills game day is powered by Energy Mark, official energy supplier of the Buffalo Bills. Sal Capaccio will check in with us from Miami a little bit later on. My name is Jeremy White. Nate Geary with me as well. And Mike Jafari producing today here for week two, seeking win number one in beautiful Miami with reportedly lots of Bills fans. If you've ever been to a Bills game in Miami, you know to expect a lot of Bills fans today. And while it's nice there, it's pretty nice here as well, Mr. Geary.
It's nice elite out. Fall season weather morning right now here, and I would take this over whatever humidity they're dealing with down in South Beach any day of the week.
Yeah, it's I got to look at the weather report to see what the latest is down there. The weather is something we, of course, want to let you know about. It's brought to you by Sullivan's Brewing Company from Ireland to Buffalo, the best ales in the world. We are one of those areas where when reporting a temperature, we're going to want to know the humidity to know, you know, the real feel and what it feels like. And Miami today, it's supposed to be hot and humid and the kind of, you know, the kind of weather that might affect fatigue and all that. Not the easiest of atmospheres is, you know, sometimes you get on there, it can get pretty nasty. So hopefully the Bills are ready for that.
Hopefully they are hydrated. Yeah, and you know, the guy that sticks out to me, obviously, is a guy that's sort of been in the crosshairs a bit this week, which is Deion Dawkins. And hopefully, you know, they've got potential like contingency plans if worst case scenario, you know, like if there does end up being issues, you know, particularly stamina wise. Listen, I've played football in Florida before. It's not an easy place to, I mean, even the best athletes in the world, that, and I'm saying at any point that that I would consider myself one of the best athletes in the world. In fact, I'm no longer that at all. But it is not an easy thing down in that heat in the sun to attempt to come back or be recovering from COVID. So this is, it's definitely a difficult spot for Deion Dawkins this week. We saw and heard, you know, him himself talk about some of his recovery process and how long it feels like it's taken him to sort of get back on track. So yeah, this week in this heat, in this humidity, there's a couple of players I'll be keeping an eye on. And I'm assuming, you know, we've heard, I think, Jordan Poyer talk about it and some of these other players talk about it during the offseason and during the season, how much water these guys are drinking. And today's the kind of day where you need to be really, really, you know, cognizant and aware of how much water you're putting in your body, because you know, it is going to be 87 with a, what is it, like a 80% humidity. Let's look here real quick. It's something of like, hi. I was talking about humidity and potentially Deion Dawkins. So just a little worry with him. You know, like obviously this week he talked a little bit about, you know, how the recovery from COVID has been. It's been a long road and it's only been a couple of weeks, really. Like it hasn't really been that long from him being essentially in the ICU, right? Like being in a very serious and traumatic situation. Like today's weather could have an impact, like for sure. And you want to hope that these guys are hydrated and you would hope that everybody that hasn't dealt with COVID like 4 weeks ago is probably in good shape. But Deion Dawkins is a little bit of a concern for me today with the weather, for sure, Jeremy.
Yeah, and you know, Nate, with regard to a player being in shape or having, even if you break a leg and you get out of game shape, when you have to come back to games and work your way back, that can be difficult to do. You know, the off season, that's why you get the surgeries.
That's right.
You choose them in off seasons because it takes more time. And, you know, it's kind of on the job, I guess, recovery, which is tough for Dawkins. And he had a tough outing. I mean, everybody did. The line did all together against Pittsburgh. Let's kind of start there, and we'll take anybody's phone calls at 803-0550. You know, what needs to be different for this team today against the Dolphins? And what you thought about week one? Let's start with what went right, what went wrong, a recap of the Steelers game, because I want to say there are certain elements of it that come as a surprise and certain elements that are not that much of a surprise. We probably expected Pittsburgh's defense to be good, but I think many Bills fans would have expected the Bills to still find a way offensively.
Yeah.
And that's probably the story, is that they didn't really find a way.
They didn't find a way, and, you know, I think one of the complaints that I heard a lot last year at times in the second half was the offense failing to sort of adapt, sort of, you know, like changing what they do from the first half to have similar success in the second half. And we saw at times this team come out a little flat offensively in the second halves of games last year. And one of the adjustments that I think was failed to be made by Brian Daboll in the offense was they just stuck with these five-man protections, and they really decided to stick in 10 personnel. They really wanted to run 4 and 5 wide receivers because they've got the guns. I think they need to be careful, Jeremy, of not leaning too hard into their depth at receiver, right? Like, this is a team that values the receiver in their pass game. They like to feature different receivers based on different matchups. The problem can be there is if you're just going to run five-man protections all day, there are very few teams in the NFL. This isn't like a shot at the Bills' offensive line. There are plenty of teams in the league right now. You're going up against NFL defenders that are also paid to disrupt offenses, right? So, like, going five-man protection all game and really not bringing in an extra body, not using Dawson Knox how they used him last year, which was, like, in the backfield as sort of an extra blocker who could leak out and make plays. And I think, like, that's something that they're going to need to start to get back to a little bit, which is finding ways to disguise protections and add 6 and 7 guys back there in order to – listen, you like who you have at receiver. Let them go win their one-on-ones. Let them go find the zones, but give yourself an opportunity to throw the ball to them.
Yeah, and, you know, halftime adjustments or, you know, what you're doing, if it's working. I wonder, at halftime, the Bills score right before the half, right? They go up 10-0, and in the first half it looked like – I mean, I thought they were the better team. It felt like 10-0, all right, they'll wake up in the second half. They move the ball better than Pittsburgh, right? They generally just look like the better team. So I guess I know the narrative about halftime adjustments sometimes, Nate, is overblown. But I guess if you're Brian Daboll and thinking about how's my offense look, I would have gone to halftime thinking, we're rusty. But we got one before the break. We're going to be fine.
Right.
You know, I might not have the best thing going right here, but it's still going to be good enough to win. And, you know, it is a little puzzling that they went so many 5 wide and 4 wide sets. What was the stat? The entire league had 1 5-wide set and the Bills had 9? You know, like, the league didn't go 5 wide in week one, and the Bills did. And I know that the passing game is their bread and butter. I know they have that depth at receiver like you just mentioned. But it is a little puzzling that they didn't ever give help when it was so clear that Pittsburgh was finding a way through with the guys they had. I mean, maybe the entire league underestimated Melvin Ingram, right?
I think that's
$4 million.
Right.
1 year, $4 million. Should I game plan around that guy?
No.
Probably not. But you know who probably should? The Raiders today might want to think about game planning around Melvin Ingram and T.J. Watt, because, you know, those two clearly had such an impact on the game on Sunday.
Yeah, you're spot on. Like, you going into that game, Jeremy, there were a couple of things that we talked about. We talked about their secondary not really being able to tell you anybody in that secondary, and they came out and they covered the hell out of, like, they did a great job getting to their zones, remaining disciplined, not leaving them, and not giving Josh Allen a lot of outs. They gave Josh Allen two plays, and he wasn't able to take advantage of either of them on those deep shots. Right, like that's the kind of defense that really disciplined zone. That when you get an opportunity and you don't take advantage, you're likely not getting another one throughout the game. So like you have to be able and listen, Al. I was talking to Joe Marino of Lockdown Bills yesterday on Sports Talk Saturday here, and like. He sort of mentioned it and phrased it as this, Jeremy, is Allen missed those two deep shots early, and he chased it for the rest of the game. Mm. And he overlooked easy throws chasing the one he missed early in the game. And that is really, I think, the best way that I've heard the offense sound or be described in that matchup is just chasing points that they'd left on the board in the first half. And at the end of the day, this offense will find its efficiency. This offense also went through phases like this last year, several of them, Jeremy, where they looked worse than they looked on Sunday. But they always seem to bounce back and find a way and create better matchups. So, like, your point, though, about the defensive matchups and who you were keying on, I could tell you I did not have Melvin Ingram in my mind at any point in pregame on Sunday. Not one time.
And you thought about him a lot in postgame.
we all did.
Yeah. The best, I read a scouting report on him in that he's the best spinner in the sport because of the number of spin moves he can unleash and how good he is at them. And when he does that, you know, he's super effective. He beat Dawkins, Williams, Feliciano. Those three had rough outings. Cody Ford, you know.
Not bad.
I guess, right. The standard for Cody Ford might be a little better. Not bad. And Mitch Morse, I mean, he did the best he could. There's one run play. I know it's a random one. But the Bills called a lot of draws, right? They called a lot of run RPOs, maybe RPOs or draws, for Josh Allen to try and get him free and clear running the ball up the middle. And there's one where Allen has tons of room. And Morse is one-on-one with his block. And I think it was Hayward at the time. Just held him there and stopped the play by himself and saved what would have been easily like an 8 to 9 yard gain right up the gut for Allen because, you know, he could just manhandle Morse in that spot. So it was a tough day for the Bills offensive line. And I think that's like the best part about today. Okay, you're not playing that defensive front that you played in Pittsburgh. And we'll see where you go from here. So the offense has to find its rhythm. You know, we talked about this during the week on WGR in the morning, Nate, where I was talking about the thing I want out of this game for the Bills is, sure, I'd love to see the offense have its A game and score 42 points. But really what I'd like is chunk plays.
Yeah.
I got to see the return of the chunk play. And if Miami plays the kind of defense they normally play, those chunk plays will be there for the Bills because they'll play their man defense in the secondary. The Bills will have opportunities where they get time, and they'll beat man coverage with their man beaters, and they'll run crossers until the cows come home, because that's what they do to this Miami team each and every time they play, is crossing routes and big chunk plays to the sideline for Diggs, to the sideline for Knox, those corner routes, lots of that. So I'll expect that today because that's what the Bills have always done against Miami with Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. And unless Miami drastically changes who they are, that's the matchup. And the Bills tend to win that matchup.
Yeah, I like this matchup a lot, Jeremy, because I think you win either way with the scheme Miami will deploy. And what I mean by that is I think you win if they go out there and decide they want to run man coverage and they want to blitz Josh Allen. I think the numbers bear that out, that's a win for the Bills. But I think it's also a win for the Bills if Miami overcoaches and they think to themselves, well, we've been beaten badly 5 straight times by this Bills offense, by Josh Allen. We're going to fundamentally change who we are. We're going to run more zone than we normally run. When we have, I think, predominantly man corners on the outside, like, we're going to switch what we do. And I think either one of those scenarios, you're winning. So I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to see Miami sort of lean in a little bit and say, it's an execution thing, right? Like, that's what it's been over the last 5 games. It's not the scheme. It's not how we're defending. It's the execution. And decide they're not going to change anything that they do normally. They're going to blitz Josh Allen. They're going to play man coverage on the outside. They're going to play some cover zero. And they're going to say, beat us. And I think you have a winning formula in both cases.
Yeah, the addition there is I forget which McCourty is it. Jason McCourty is the one that went to Miami. Or is it wasn't Devin, right?
And the McCourty. Yes. Yeah.
Jason McCourty, he left New England. He goes to Miami to join Brian Flores in that defense. So that's the one thing back there that has changed for them because – and I guess also Byron Jones. The first matchup, he's hurt. He leaves the game and Diggs eats up Igbinoghene, the rookie at that time. So you've got a more experienced secondary, a better secondary. It might go a little better for them. But the reality is that the Bills are supposed to beat a team like this. They're supposed to beat a defense like this. You know, Diggs can beat anybody. We know that. And Gabriel Davis, you know, we'll see if he gets more opportunity this week. Emmanuel Sanders, Nate, he had his opportunities last week. He got open. He just didn't come down with a catch, and he got overthrown on another one. If they hit those two plays, Sanders has a huge day. So he put himself in position to produce, and hopefully we see that today from this offense. The running backs, are we going to see any sort of mixing of who's active? I mean, Zach Moss, right, was a surprise inactive last week against the Steelers. I would fully expect Singletary to be ready. And here's Breida playing the team he was on last year in Miami. So I don't know. I feel like I should expect Moss to be scratched again.
I was maybe not arguing is the wrong word to use here. I was debating the usage of Zach Moss the other day on Twitter, and someone had mentioned to me, well, the Bills would have brought in more protection, or they would have adjusted to protecting better in that football game if Zach Moss played, because he's the best, you know, run blocking running back or pass blocking running back. And I thought to myself, Zach Moss doesn't change how they're protecting anything. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I get if you want to say the Bills needed somebody in that game as a road grader, a guy that could grind out 3 and 4 yard runs, maybe. But like that again, it's just not who they are. It's not who they want to be. It's not what they believe gives them the best chance to win football games. I think about in that game the their inability to protect. I don't think Zach Moss changes that at all, Jeremy. So like, there's the area where you think he's going to actually, you know, bring some benefit to you in the short yardage situations. They didn't really have a ton of short yardage situations. And even when they did, that was a terrible, terrible 4th-and-1 play. But like, Josh Allen runs those anyways. Like, you're not turning around more times than not and handing the ball off to a running back and those fourth and ones and 4th-and-2s or near the goal line. Like, that's just not what they do. So I think Singletary's fine as a pass blocker. They wouldn't have put him out there. They wouldn't have sat Zach Moss if they weren't comfortable with Devin Singletary, you know, back there protecting. This running back situation is, it's not good. It's not bad.
It's just there.
It's just, yeah. They Jeremy, I am going to think and wonder this probably forever. I really wonder what happens if Travis Etienne is on the board for the Bills. I'm fascinated by the thought of it because I do think, generally speaking, this team, this offense, it's not missing a running back per se, but it's missing a threat. It is definitely missing an aspect of game planning on the other side where the other team has to say, well, if all goes wrong and this team can't throw the football today, they can turn around and hand it to a guy that can beat us. It's there. I'm fascinated by the idea of what happens if he's on the board.
Yeah, I mean, they've got lots of weapons, and it's not to say that it's a major problem, but it is something we talked about going the offseason. What you're talking about is they don't have a guy who you move all over everywhere and you wonder what they're going to do with him. And if they had drafted Etienne, I mean, maybe he gets hurt, but whatever. Maybe they do that with him. You know, you and I have mentioned before, C.J. Spiller in this offense is perfect. God. It's perfect. He's perfect because he could play running back. They could leave him in to protect, maybe. They'd split him out wide. They'd put him in the slot. It would just be, okay, I got to think about this at all times. And it doesn't mean he's, you know, the best running back ever. Just that versatility, that's something I was hoping they would get this offseason. Tight end is another spot I thought they could maybe get some more versatility or another weapon. But they brought everybody back. And I think that's probably the reason, Nate, that we and a lot of other Bills fans would want to see them today. Okay, you brought everybody back. I need it to look like it did last year. And then, like, you know, the league hasn't caught up with them, which I don't think is the case.
I don't either.
The talent on this offense is still very good. You might have questions about how the line played last week. You might have questions about the way they attacked the Steelers last week. But the offense still has one of the best quarterbacks from last year, one of the best receivers from last year, a great weapon in the slot in Cole Beasley, a blossoming rookie from now into his second year in Gabriel Davis, a line that did well enough. Like, you still have enough that you should be expecting to win the division and compete for the AFC, especially with the way the defense played week one, if we can see how that, you know, pushes into week two as well. 803-0550 is our phone number. 1-888-550-2550. You can give us a call. You can be a part of this. Call us from Miami if you want to. Call us from Buffalo. Call us from, I don't know, Norway, wherever you want to call us from. We'll take your phone calls. We'll read your texts. We'll read your tweets. It is Buffalo Bills game day, of course, here on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network, and it's Bills and Dolphins before two home games against Washington and Houston. There's a little bit, Nate, I think there's a little bit of panic's not the right word. Let's just say that
anxiety.
Let's just say that you have a panic button, you know where it is, and maybe sometime this week you just check to see, like, okay, yeah, there it is.
Testing. It still works.
It's still there if I need to hit it. Because if they lose and they go two games down to Miami, then not everybody will be hitting it, but there will be plenty that do. And I'll be honest. Like, for me, Miami is a moderate threat. If they take a two-game lead, that becomes real.
Yeah.
And New England could be ahead. And it also comes down to how Tua looks today, because Tua Tagovailoa in his first season did not look particularly impressive, but he won games with them. And, you know, at the end of the day, if the Bills and Dolphins play 10 times during Josh Allen and Tua Tagovailoa's time, and Tua is never impressive but always wins, well, you know, there's going to be a scoreboard check on
those. That's right.
So if they find a way today and they go up 2-0 and the Bills are 0-2, that's like a league-wide story, and it's, well, maybe that's where Bills fans are more comfortable, right? Like the underdog. Okay, fine. Pressure's off. Now you got to get back in the race. I don't know. I just think there's that undercurrent of a really big game. It's an important one.
I know. I hate doing the must-win in week two, but.
Yeah, it's just, it's not a must-win. It's just, you know, it feels pretty important here.
It does.
It feels like but I guess put it this way. A loss is big. A win is not that big. You know, it's almost like, There are win-wins. There are, you know, must-wins. That it just don't lose today. You know, don't fall two games down to Miami. That's all. Don't fall two games down. And Tua, I'm the division is interesting. Every game in the division this year is interesting, Nate, because of quarterbacks. Scout Tua, now watch Tua, and then down the line watch Zach Wilson, and then Mac Jones. You know, you get six games against quarterbacks of this caliber. Unproven, young, whatever. The Patriots would win all those games when they would win the division. It's part of the reason they handled it every year for 20 years. So find a way. Josh Allen doesn't lose to Tua. Like, that's the script at the bottom of the caption for this game preview. Josh Allen doesn't lose to Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, like, that has to probably continue to be the story. And we're going to take some phone calls on the other side of this break, Jeremy. And I am wondering, you know, is this game more about Josh Allen or Tua? And if it's more about Tua, you know what I mean? Like, I want to have the discussion about what it means if this game truly is about Tua's performance. Because if it is about if Tua plays well or poorly, where should that matter in the line of how Josh Allen plays in this game? Because if he is playing well, if Josh Allen's playing like Josh Allen, to me, it almost doesn't matter what the other guy does on the other side. When Josh Allen looks like the MVP candidate, they're a really hard team to beat, and almost regardless of unless you're, you know, Patrick Mahomes. Short of that, I mean, it's, you know, so I for me, it's always going to be how Josh Allen plays and less about the other guy. But I am interested this week to sort of see what this new quote-unquote Miami offense looks like with Tua and a lot of the RPOs. Well, we'll have plenty of time to talk about that over the next hour and a half.
Sure. If you're on hold, stick with us. 803-0550. It's also good news, big news, that no Will Fuller today. I'll be honest, it's a sigh of relief for me. And you got to be kind of disappointed, right? He's your guy. You like Will Fuller.
I do like Will Fuller.
Yeah.
I am a little disappointed by it. I guess I'm not that disappointed because I would rather not see him in this matchup. But it's too bad because I think his absence changes things for that offense a little bit. I mean, just like the difference between him and Preston Williams is
huge.
It's a notable difference.
I was just giving you a little Notre Dame shout out there for Will Fuller.
I appreciate that.
You gotta love Will Fuller.
Yeah,
all right, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. It is Buffalo Bills game day. Brought to you by TRS Heating and Air Conditioning. They want to intercept your heating bills this football season. Winter's right around the corner. TRS Heating and Air Conditioning. Again, they want to intercept your heating bill. Let TRS intercept your heating bill. Register to win at WGR550.com. Your phone calls next here on the Buffalo Bills pregame show is Buffalo Bills game day on WGR Sports Radio 550.
I think that they're the second-best team in the AFC. Obviously, nobody's right now at that Kansas City Chief level, the Chiefs right now. And you saw that in Week 1, you know, the way they came back and beat the Cleveland Browns. You know, there's still time to bounce back, and we'll still see where New England is. Miami didn't do too bad. You know, the division, except for the Jets, looks pretty good. Plenty of time to bounce back, and certainly it's a matter that they just, you know, just got to play a better game.
John Clayton, you can hear him on WGR in the afternoons with Mike Shope and the Bulldog. Be listening for the ECMC Halftime Show with Nate Geary. ECMC, go where the Bills go. Nate recaps the key moments of the first half and brings you up to date on the Skyworks stats of the game. Skyworks Equipment Rental, your construction equipment and tool rental source, building America from ground up. Visit SkyworksLLC.com. Bills Game Day powered by Energy Mark, official energy supplier of the Buffalo Bills. And weather, well, here in Buffalo, it is absolutely gorgeous today, a beautiful day. Great fall day. Great day to watch some football. In Miami, we expect it to be in the 80s with high humidity. We'll get Sal's full breakdown of how that looks coming up top of the hour. But weather in Miami expected to be hot and sweaty. One of those kind of games. Time to get now connected with our fans, powered by Nextiva, the official communications partner, and by Premcom, the official telephone system of the Buffalo Bills. Power your business connection with Premcom. And we'll go to the phones, talk about this matchup or last week, whichever you're feeling about here. We'll go to John in Rochester to lead us off here. John, good morning. You're on Buffalo Bills game day.
Hey, Jeremy. Hey, Nate. You know, I got to tell you, we're going to win big today. And I'll tell you why. I really think, and you were talking about Tua not long ago, I think he's really the weak link in Miami. And I'll tell you, I was shocked when I found out last year. I thought Tua was like 6'3", 6'4". I understand he's only like 5'11", 6', and he had that hip injury his last year in college. I'm so shocked that the Dolphins would take a chance on a guy like that. I think that's going to be the key to the game. I think Allen's going to light it up, and Tua's going to be the weak link. What are your thoughts?
He's 6'1". If there's anything about Tua I would say about size, he seems a little slight of frame, you know, for like NFL quarterbacks.
And I know he did gain a little bit of weight in the offseason. I want to say he's something like that. There was a story that he tried to gain like 10 pounds of muscle or something in the offseason. But yeah, like he's not Josh Allen.
The Bills have, you know, what people would say is the ideal body build for a quarterback. But there are plenty of guys that are smaller that are doing good things. I mean, Kyler Murray and Patrick Mahomes isn't exactly like the biggest guy in the world. But to the point about Tua, is he the weak link? Maybe. He's at the best, he's the unproven link. You know, last year, they bounced him in and out of the lineup with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I didn't mind that at all. You know, it was against the norm where, well, you put a guy in, you can never take him out, you're going to crush his confidence, you know, all that stuff that said. Brian Flores juggled it. They got a winning season. They missed the playoffs by one game. Maybe they make it if they don't go to Tua. But, Nate, maybe if Tua stays in the whole time, they don't go 10-6. It's a little bit of a rougher ride, but we get to see more of his growth. Instead, he comes out, Fitz goes in, right? So Brian Flores was kind of trying to do both, which I actually didn't mind last year. It might be because Tua doesn't have it. It might also be that Tua is growing and is showing things, and we just haven't had a chance to see it yet because he hasn't put the game film out there yet. He hasn't actually played in the games. And that's why today I think a full off season, you're the guy, number one reps all the way. Today's a day for him to prove a little more
yeah.
how much growth there has been.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, there's a lot riding on him. And more importantly, Jeremy, this is something that, you know, it's not going to just be us on this pregame show. It's going to be everyone in the state of Florida that is a Miami Dolphins fan for the next 10 or 15 years is going to look at what Justin Herbert is doing in Los Angeles. And Justin Herbert is probably very close to having we're close to having discussions about Justin Herbert in the same conversations as Josh Allen, as these young MVP caliber candidates. Like, he's that good. And for the Dolphins to not really still even know what they have in Tua, it has to be a frustrating development for them, right? Like, at least in LA, I think everyone knows what you have in Justin Herbert. I think we're all on the same page there. I think there's so much discourse on Tua. You know, I mean, I'm on one, you know, I think extreme side of it, which is I don't believe that he is. I think he's a starter in the league for a loaded team that isn't going to ask him to do a lot and has the best offensive line in football, and he's not getting paid a lot of money, so you can really build that team. I don't believe he's a franchise-level quarterback, and there are people that believe the exact opposite of that, and it's weird about a guy like this so early in his career that you can have such polar opposites this early. But like, I was listening to One Bills Live this week, Greg Cosell was on, and the way that Cosell was sort of talking about Tua made a lot of sense to me. It was resonating with me because it was the same thing we saw in college. There is nothing different about Tua in Alabama than the NFL. The only true difference is the level of competition around him and on the other side of the ball. I mean, he was throwing to five first-round picks on the outside, a Heisman Trophy winner, and, you know, like, it's just, I look back at his time in college, and I think this is something you probably could have predicted was going to happen at the next level. It was going to be really hard for him to replicate the success he had in college based on guys. He never had to get off his first read, Jeremy. Not once. Like, he was always, his first read was open. And in the NFL, you can't win football games like that.
One thing I wonder about, Nate, with like quarterbacks and the evolution of the position, it used to be that they were all statues. And then some guys started to move and run, and you would hear, well, you're never going to be able to survive moving and running if you can't hit your targets anyway and still be a pocket passer. And that era lived for a while. You know, you'd have your mobile guys, but you had Breeze, Brady, and Peyton Manning running the show. The position went through that kind of quarterback. And now I think the position goes through Mahomes, Allen, Brady's still here. We don't talk about him. But just what I'm getting to is now it's, listen, you can do everything great, but if you can't be a freak show out there every once in a while and make a play yourself, I mean, Mahomes is at the top of this list. I mentioned Allen. I don't want to say like Kyler Murray's the third one, but, you know, even Aaron Rodgers is making incredible throws on the run across his body. Russell Wilson is in this category, right? Like, if you're not the playmaker, then you're not going to get it done. Outside of Tom Brady still, who's 58 right. years old. But to me, that's the new quarterback. And if Tua is just first read efficient at Alabama, and he's not actually the huge playmaker, I mean, Jalen Hurts, of course, did some of that, right? It's the same conversation about Mac Jones. Are we going to be talking about Mac Jones being like, I mean, he's good. He can throw it where you need him to throw it. But can he ever do anything off script, off schedule, that's going to change a game the way that so many of the young quarterbacks right now do? Justin Herbert, who you mentioned. Even Joe Burrow can run a decent amount. The question is, like, what level of freak show can you get at the quarterback position? And I don't know how much of that is into his game.
Yeah, there's not a lot of it in there. And we're talking about, too, with Tua, how he's successful and how they've built this offense around him, Jeremy. And it's based around the RPO. And I want to... I guess I want to be careful in calling RPOs a gimmick, because I don't believe they are, but I believe that you can't really build an offense around them. I think there's a place for them within your offense. I'd actually like to see the Bills run more of that. They like to run RPO, I think, more so from under center than they do in shotgun. And this is all you're going to see today from this Miami Dolphins team is RPO, RPO, RPO. And for those at home, it's a run-pass option, right? It's the opportunity for essentially your quarterback to take two options instead of dropping back, sitting back to throw, and going over the coverage and trying to find, you know, one through five in the target realm. Like, you are basically giving him one passing target and one rushing target. And you have to read one guy at the end of the line of scrimmage. If he comes upfield, you're handing the ball off and taking your 3 to 5 yards. If he's crashing down on that run, you're pulling and you are making a very quick throw. It's a way to manufacture the quick throws that Greg Cosell was talking about. I just think in the NFL, all the data suggests, all of the top quarterbacks would tell you stylistically, you are benefited when you hold the football in the league and you can extend plays. People talk about, you know, running an offense off schedule. That is, none of that describes to his game. And that can be a really difficult thing to win consistently with.
It's the hardest thing to defend is when there's the artistry of a Mahomes off schedule. You did everything right on defense. It doesn't matter. He beat you anyway. You know, like, that's the thing. I think what you're talking about with those scripted plays, those RPOs with a read or a pass right here, what you're doing is the offensive coordinator is saying, listen, I know exactly how to get a guy open for 3 yards. You just have to pull the trigger. You know,
right.
You're almost taking the player out of the game. Make it very easy for someone. And that's a good way to bring a guy along, and eventually you want to introduce everything else. And say, you know, now I need you to check out of a bad play and save my butt, the offensive coordinator, because you know what you're doing out here. Like Dak Prescott checking out of 12 runs for the Cowboys and making them into passes, and they were probably much more successful because they moved the ball all over the field.
Yeah, and I do wonder, though, Jeremy, and I said this during the week, maybe last week. I mean, like I said, I'm on an extreme end of this Tua discourse, but I genuinely think that Deshaun Watson is going to be this team's quarterback next year. I think he'd be their quarterback this year if they had it their way.
If he didn't.
Yeah, I mean, right.
Allegedly sexually assault 2 dozen women.
Right.
If that doesn't happen.
Like, he's their quarterback.
He's traded, right?
Yeah. And he's traded to the Dolphins. Like, he's their quarterback. So, and it doesn't, doesn't it feel like everyone else thinks that, too? Like aren't we there, though? Like, in a weird way, people still want to see Tua. Like, how good can Tua be? But, like, you know, Deshaun Watson would be this team's quarterback if there wasn't circumstance.
Right. Bad circumstances brought on by Watson.
By himself, correct.
I wonder how he ever plays again.
I wondered that, too. But
that's out of my hands and in the league's hands and his future team's hands, I suppose. Let's get more phone calls. Walter in Toronto. Walter's still with us. Walter, good morning. You're on Buffalo Bills game day.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Just wanted to get your ideas regarding our kicking game. The first point, I was a little disappointed that we didn't go for the field goal on that 4th and 8. I know it was a bit of a stiff win, but I think Bass could have got that, and that would have made it a one-score game in the fourth when we were playing catch-up. But more specifically, what's the history? Why did we get rid of our last year's punter, Borroquez? Was it strictly a money deal? Or I thought he was coming into his own, and, I mean, that blocked punt for a touchdown, that was a dagger. That reminded me of, I think it was 2018, 2019, when we gave up a blocked punt touchdown to the Patriots, and that was the dagger in that game as well.
Yeah.
Just if you guys can just enlighten me a little bit on the history of the punter and why we made the move.
They did not tender him a contract offer. It would have cost $2.1 million for one season for Borroquez. So I think the answer is yes. They felt like it wasn't worth that amount of money. And in their defense,
they don't punt a lot.
They punted the least of any team.
Yeah.
So, hey, man, I mean, you do a nice job, but we're going in a different direction. We plan to never punt again. You know, so it might have just been that. And on the blocked punt, you know, Nate, a few people have pointed out, it looks like Matt Hawk in that spot is not all the way back 15 yards. It also looks like he takes 12 steps before the punt. It's not a quick release, as they say. So maybe that's a factor there. I mean, the Steelers player blocked it with his armpit. I mean, it wasn't
like, yeah, it wasn't like it was a
it wasn't
fingertips.
Close.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. The blocked punt is, that's tough. To happen twice at home in two important games, right, against important opponents, how often is a punt supposed to be blocked? It feels like it should happen once a decade.
Yeah, like almost never.
Yeah. So I'm sure Sean McDermott was not pleased about it. That's two losses on his win-loss ledger that basically come down to having a punt blocked.
Yeah. And for me, Jeremy, to Walter's question, I think a lot of people are asking that question about Corey Bohorquez. I mean, you know, he is on an NFL roster. I want to say he's punting for Green Bay. I think he's Green Bay's punter.
He got traded. He went to the Rams and then got traded.
Okay. So, yeah, right? I think Green Bay is where he landed. I don't know. I was a fan of Corey Bohorquez. I thought that he could at any point uncork like a 75-yarder. But at the same time, Corey Bohorquez could also uncork like a 15-yarder. And I think the variance there, I think they wanted someone a little bit more consistent. Somebody that when they're punting, the Bills very often aren't punting from deep in their own territory. They don't need a 75-yard punt. They need accuracy. They need, you know, hang time. They need somebody that can throw it on the 10-yard line really high and let the you know, and get a lot of fair catches and pin other teams deep in their opposing territory. So yeah, like but I think the overarching point here about the punter is it's not really like who cares, but it's a little bit of this team doesn't really punt the ball ever. And yeah. And if they more than likely, if it's fourth and short, this team's going to give it hard look.
It's another thing I want to see them do today is get back to who you were, the aggressive fourth down team.
Well, also, don't have so many fourth downs.
That's true. Good thing you brought up the kicking game, Walter. For every field goal this football season, Can Bottle Return will make a donation to Courage of Carly Fund. Join our goal to kick pediatric cancer in the can. It's Can Bottle Return, your fastest and friendliest redemption center. If you're on hold, we'll get right to your phone calls when we return here on Buffalo Bills Game Day. Happy Football Sunday. Stay tuned following today's game for the Coach's Podium with Head Coach Sean McDermott live during the Bills postgame show brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown, the official dealership of the Bills. We have we're very short on time, but we can get a call in. Let's do it. So, Ban in Erie? You're up quick. Dan in NT instead. All right, Dan in Northtown Automotive. You're up quick. Go ahead.
Hey, yes, real quick, I just wanted to say there's way too much panic from last week's game. I think last week answered the question, what happens when an unstoppable object meets an immovable force? I think that if the Dolphins try to do the same thing that Pittsburgh Steelers did, they're going to lose because they don't have the Steelers roster. So short and simple.
All right. Thanks, Dan. We needed a short and simple call. Glad to have your thoughts on that. We'll run that by Sal Capaccio, top of the hour, as well. You know, if the Dolphins try to do what the Steelers did, do they have the personnel for it? They don't have the line for it. They do have a better secondary, probably. So something to watch. You know, the Dolphins have good corners, a good safety back there. Something to watch. And, of course, if they also get out of who they are, that tells a message about how effective that is at stopping the Bills. Sal Capaccio joins us next here on Buffalo Bills Game Day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.